You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
On today's Red Agenda, tributes to Gerard Houllier, the man behind Liverpool's historic treble in 2001 and the transformation of Liverpool Football Club. And of course, he has passed away at the age of 73. I'm Steve Hothersall. Joining me on the Red Agenda today, Simon Hughes and James Pearce. Simon, very sad news. Gerard spent 6 years at Anfield, a transformative 6 years, particularly the early years of his reign.
Definitely, definitely. I think modern Liverpool, as we see it now, has a lot to do with Gerard Houllier. He revolutionised the club, really. Made it a European powerhouse again and, you know, a serious challenger domestically as well. And it's just very sad. I mean, he obviously had his health problems going back 20 years when he was Liverpool manager. And, you know, it probably stopped him potentially from winning the league, I think, because they were on a roll at that point, Liverpool, under him. And when I saw the news this morning, I was, even though you worry it might come at some point for someone who, I suppose, has had quite public health issues, it still hits you, and it's just really sad. I mean, I got to know him a little bit as a person. I mean, you obviously see the manager, and incredible manager, great record with Liverpool, as I say, made them a really serious football team again, had a massive contribution on the careers of Jamie Carragher and Steven Gerrard. I mean, I know Carragher absolutely adores him and helped put him on the path to greatness, which is, you know, incredible, really. But I got to know him a little bit as a person, and just a really nice man. I'm just really sort of echoing what other people have said. I think when you're football manager, it can have a massive effect on you as a person. I think, you know, for the last couple of years as Liverpool manager, it was a bit of a struggle, and obviously he sort of left through the back door a little bit by the end, but it's easy to forget exactly what he did to Liverpool. And what I loved about him is passion for the city and the club. I think despite the disappointment of leaving Liverpool when he did it, he absolutely loved it, loved the club and loved the city. And just a really, really entertaining guy to be in the presence of. Great storyteller, absolutely loved football. So yeah, it's a massive loss, and I think hopefully Liverpool as a fan base will be able to show the respect for him at some point. I mean, obviously we talking about the fans being back on the ground at the moment, but hopefully in a proper full way, because I think he deserves a huge amount of credit for the modernisation of the club.
Terrible year, so many great names lost. Let me just read the tribute from Jamie Carragher, which he's put on his social media. Absolutely devastated by the news about Gerard Houllier. I was in touch with him only last month to arrange him coming to Liverpool. Love that man to bits. He changed me as a person and as a player and got back winning trophies. RIP, boss. I mean, if we think of his legacy, James, I mean, obviously the trophies element is up there. He taught Liverpool how to win trophies again, and they came in a flood as well.
Yeah, do you know what? I think more than anything, he gave Liverpool fans pride back, and, you know, actually making them a force again, not just domestically, but in Europe after, you know, the barren years of the 90s when Liverpool had dropped away, and you wondered, you know, when you were going to see, you know, Liverpool getting their hands on the big prizes again. I mean, I think about that, you know, that incredible night in Dortmund for the UEFA Cup final against Alaves. I was lucky to be there as a fan that night, you know, but for Istanbul, you know, that final against Alaves would get talked about a hell of a lot more than it does, because you know, there's not too many times you win a major European showpiece final 5-4 with a golden goal. You know, he modernised the club. He dragged the club into this century. You know, obviously he brought in, you know, continental methods that, you know, took time to bed in. But, you know, you only have to listen to the respect and love that people like Jamie Carragher and Michael Owen and Steven Gerrard have got for him to realise their appreciation for what he did for their careers, because he opened their eyes to, you know, the nutrition side of things, the importance of leading your life right when you're not at the training ground. And their longevity and success at the highest level was down to him. And I've always thought with Houllier's reign, the one big shame was obviously his well documented health problems, because I think certainly all the players of that generation will tell you that he wasn't quite the same manager after he came back. And his legacy is there for everyone to see, because although Klopp has certainly taken Liverpool onto the next level, Liverpool's revival all started with the fantastic work of Gerard Houllier, and he'd be sorely missed.
Yeah, done many jobs in world football. I think he had a unique connection to Liverpool, though, didn't he, Sign? You've written extensively about this. Obviously, he was the school teacher who became the manager.
Yeah, he taught in the partway down Queen's Drive, not too far away from Anfield, in the late 60s at Allsop Comprehensive. He did a year there and played in the Zingari League as well, as a bit of a tough centre-forward, apparently. So he had that connection with Liverpool before coming here as a manager, and has obviously gone back to France and worked his way up the hard way, really. I mean, he'd gone into education and become a teacher, but had taken over at his local club and built them up. And then I think he went to Lens, got them out of the second division, got the plum job at Paris Saint-Germain, who were throwing a lot of money about in the mid to late 80s. Did fantastically well there, got the French national job. Probably quite a difficult time for French football early in the 90s, going through a bit of a transition in terms of the post-Platini era, and ended up, obviously, missed out on the 1994 World Cup in quite dramatic circumstances, but then rediscovered sort of himself again by helping the young players at Clairefontaine. And I've heard Thierry Henry talk about the importance of the role that Houllier did there. And when Liverpool were looking to go foreign with the manager, he was very high up on the list, because he was sort of an acquaintance of Rick Parry, really. And it was obviously an uneasy start for him at Liverpool, because it's quite well known, that the joint manager role with Roy Evans didn't work. But I think the one thing, I was just thinking about listening to James there, and I think the one thing that he, big thing that he did for Liverpool, he made the fans certainly dream of the impossible. Mm. Again, talking about the Alaves game there and scoring so late against Arsenal in the final when they got battered. I think in the decade before, Liverpool had some great football teams, played probably better football, in terms of more exciting football in the mid to late 90s under Roy Evans. But I think when it felt like when things were going to go wrong in that period, he did go wrong, whereas under Houllier, he made the team a lot tougher to beat. And I think it sort of set the tone for the decade that would follow in many ways, in terms of all the mad results that Liverpool have had. You never think that Liverpool are out of it. And that started again under Gerard Houllier because of the way, some of the games went. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think certainly, the match-going fans from that period, that they will look back on that period very fondly, because there were so many great nights. I mean, I remember being at Anfield for when Liverpool beat Barcelona, Gary McAllister penalty, and for so long before that, I think Liverpool had failed when it mattered in European football, and they got to the position of opportunity and really ground out a win against a great Barcelona team that had Rivaldo, who was the best player in the world at the time, and Liverpool really did a job on them that night. And I think it really confirmed that Liverpool were back at the top of European football again. And who knows, if they were so close. I mean, there's the famous comment about, I think, 10 games from greatness, which he got ridiculed for the way that season unraveled. But Liverpool were so close under Gerard Houllier. They were very, very close. And it's just a shame. I remember meeting him in Paris, as I say, 5 years ago, and had a great afternoon with him. And it was a big regret that he never became the manager that won that league for Liverpool, because I think because of what happened afterwards, under Benitez and certainly Klopp, and to some extent Brendan Rodgers, I think his achievements get forgotten a little bit, but he shouldn't. He should be remembered as one of the great Liverpool managers, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I think you've hit it spot on there, because without what Gerard Houllier did, I don't think Istanbul really happens, does it, James? And actually, he is the man who gave Steven Gerrard his debut, introduced a whole load of influential players into that side. I mean, these things roll on over the years. Obviously, the manager might leave, but the impression that the manager has made certainly contributes to what follows on.
Oh, undoubtedly. I think, you know, we mentioned before, didn't we? You know, this is a guy who was absolutely influential in the development of, you know, some of the best young talents who have ever pulled on a Liverpool shirt in, you know, Owen and Carragher and Gerrard. You look at the transfer business as well. You know, this is the manager who signed Sammy Hippier, you know, Stefan Hencho, you know, Didi Haman, you know, Heskey, Gary McAllister, you know, someone who's absolutely cherished by Liverpool fans. What, you know, 20 years on, you know, John Arnarisa, Dudek with, you know, his heroics in Istanbul. I was looking before, actually, I think 9 of the starting 11 in Istanbul were either, you know, brought to the club by Houllier or were nurtured and developed by him. So yeah, you know, his legacy is there for everyone to see. And it's, you know, not just in Istanbul, but as Simon said, just in terms of bringing those big nights back to the club. And, you know, I remember being actually in the Nou Camp, the away game against Barcelona, prior to the, you know, the home game at Anfield. And again, you know, he got ridiculed. I think it was, I'm sure the Barcelona, you know, the media and the manager went to town on him afterwards and called it anti-football, because it was probably the worst 0-0 draw I think I've ever seen, you know, up in the gods in the Nou Camp. I don't think Liverpool had a shot, but it was, you know, tactically, it was absolutely spot on in terms of knowing how to nullify the threat of a team. And it was, you know, it was a throwback almost to, you know, it had been so long since Liverpool had been going toe-to-toe with, you know, the giants of European football and actually, you know, annoying them to that extent and then coming out on top. And you can't really, you know, overstate just how important he was in terms of making Liverpool a force again.
One of my biggest memories, Si, was actually his return after he'd been away for 5 months. So he'd had this life-saving open-heart surgery. They were playing Roma, and obviously his great mate and opposite number, Fabio Capello, was the Roma manager, and he wanted to come back sort of low-key, didn't he, under the radar. I don't think he wanted it to overshadow his players and what was at stake, so he sort of slid up through the tunnel, didn't he, just before kickoff, and then all of a sudden all the flash bulbs were popping, everyone was getting a picture of it. Massive emotion engulfed Anfield.
Yeah, I think it really, really helped the team. I mean, it was an incredible night, that one. I mean, I think when you think back about it now, I do wonder whether he thinks he came back a bit too soon. I think he privately probably would have admitted that, but I think this was the reaction inside Anfield that night just showed you how much he was loved. You know, it's so easy to forget. As I say, Liverpool have had some great managers since, but at that time, you know, Houllier was king. You know, people loved him because he'd started turning Liverpool around and got them into a position of respect again, as James used that word. I know obviously some of the words from Barcelona weren't too kind about the way Liverpool played, but that's the way Liverpool had played if you go back sort of in the 60s, 70s. They went away in Europe and stunk places out and got results, and that's what he managed to do. And I love that about him. He didn't care what people thought, really, in that sense. I mean, I know later when, in the last 2 years, I think, you know, listening to people around the club, I think that the health issue sort of, he lost a bit of edge in his judgment, I think, in the last 2 years. And it is so sad because it is one of those big what-if sort of conundrums, I think. You do wonder how it would have ended up for him and how people would have thought about him since leaving Liverpool had he remained healthy. I mean, that game against Leeds, it's absolutely incredible when you think about, like, sort of the pressure of managing Liverpool. I think, you know, you think about Graeme Souness. It must. I know he said on the record that it never affected him in terms of the job and the heart bypass that he had. But I do think it reminds of just how pressurised that the job of being Liverpool manager is, and the task of rebuilding Liverpool and not just the team but the training ground as well. You know, Melwood was pretty basic when he came in, but it was one of the sort of first things that he tried to overhaul, made Melwood a modern training ground. It's, as I say, I just feel really sad that he's passed away, because he was just a really nice bloke, as I say, just a really, really nice bloke who was really entertaining with his time and absolutely just loved football. One of those people you could listen to for hours, just absolutely loved football.
Another great name taken away from us in 2020, Liverpool Football Club, indebted to Gerard Houllier, who sadly passed away at the age of 73. This is The Red Agenda, and right now, if you subscribe to The Athletic, you can give another subscription as a gift for free. The perfect present for any footy fans this Christmas. Great analysis, in-depth features from the very best football writers around, including our own James Pearce and Simon Hughes, as well as ad-free versions of all our podcasts. Say hello to 2021 and share the gift of The Athletic's unrivaled football coverage for a whole year. The perfect prezi for yourself and for someone else. Head to theathletic.com/Liverpool Pod. That's theathletic.com/Liverpool Pod and sign up. Right, on the pitch, of course, Liverpool missing the chance to go top of the Premier League after a pretty poor display at Craven Cottage. The away form is definitely under the microscope, and Liverpool have now dropped 11 points in the Premier League. James, they dropped 15 in the whole of last season. What's up?
yeah, I don't think you need to be a rocket scientist to work out the root of the problem. I think you just can't get away from the injury situation for me. I mean, I think Liverpool have done unbelievably well to cope as they have done since the initial hammer blow of losing Virgil van Dijk in the Merseyside derby 2 months ago. And I think prior to the weekend, they'd obviously managed to win their Champions League group with something to spare and taken, I think it was 14 points out of a possible 18 in the league. And we'd seen, time and time again, fringe players stepping up and delivering. But it felt to me like Sunday was just, the day when all those injuries almost caught up with them. And not just in terms of the personnel that were missing, but also just the demands that have been placed on those players who are still standing, who haven't been able to get the kind of breather that I think Klopp would have ideally liked to have given them. Because I thought fatigue definitely played a part. The news, obviously, that Jota is going to be out for 6 to 8 weeks is, I wouldn't surprise me if that contributed to just how bad Liverpool performed on the weekend. Because I think, players are human beings, aren't they? And you just think they've had so much bad luck this season. And then to get that kind of news that a player who's come in and lit the place up, scored 9 goals in, 17 games and, become a real popular figure off the pitch at Liverpool as well, to suddenly lose him in a nothing game. And, the same with Tsimikas, and of course, Keita picked up another knock as well. So, you're looking at nine, players who are first team players to be missing. It was a very, awful first half, improved second half, but, Liverpool didn't deserve any more than a point. There's no doubt about that. But for me, it was almost understandable in a way when you've got two centre midfielders playing at centre back, you've got, an attacker in Minamino playing centre midfield, you've got Sadio Mane, who's now equaled the worst, barren run of his Liverpool career, probably ideally needs a break. But when you've only got Origi to come on and he looks out of sorts, that's not really a possibility with no Jota. So all in all, I actually thought, although yes, you look at it as 2 points dropped, I think it was important that Liverpool came through that weekend having not actually lost ground on anyone else because of the other results.
I'm a big fan of Jordan Henderson off the pitch as well as on it, and watching him speak to Sky afterwards, really interesting, diplomatic, professional, said he couldn't really put his finger on it, the display, said they trained well and didn't want to make excuses. But maybe you just got a hint from some of his responses, Si, that he felt not enough is being said about the pressure that's being put on these players.
Mm, yeah, I mean, I actually thought Jordan Henderson was one of Liverpool's better players in the first half, and then when he went to centre-half in the second half, was excellent, really. But yeah, you can sense a lot of frustration in the Liverpool players when they speak at the moment. Obviously, we've had a few comments after the Brighton game on social media and stuff like that. But he's the captain, isn't he? I think you could hear him again on the pitch yesterday through the 2,000 fans that were inside Craven Cottage, and his influence is enormous. I think at the moment with Liverpool, you can always sort of tell when it's going to be a bad performance by the first couple of minutes, when passes are a bit short and they're not connecting. And I think part of the problem is the fact that Liverpool, play with such high intensity at the best of times. As we've discussed so many times, you've got to be really fit to play for Liverpool. The success of the team relies on having players who are fit and available. And if you not quite at it. I think it shows, you know, I think that the team doesn't seem as fluid as it normally would, because it requires that level of fitness to play for them. At the moment, obviously, the players who are available are playing a lot of games, and they don't have as much scope for changing the team around. But just on Jota, I mean, I'm still quite interested to hear what Jurgen Klopp's reasoning really is for playing him in the game of Mitchell. And I think it's probably lost a little bit of credit in the bank by playing him in that game. I mean,
he shouldn't have been involved, should he, Si, at all?
Shouldn't, yeah, I don't think he should have been involved in that game. No, I don't really. The only logical explanation, and I've discussed this, you know, with a few people, is that obviously that game there was two and a half million quid riding on the results of that game, because the proceeds from victories in the Champions League are particularly quite high, and obviously Liverpool can't afford to lose much more money. It was an opportunity to go and get some more money out of the competition. So in a year where the revenues in the club have been obviously been decimated, so I can only assume that might be behind some of the thinking as to why he played a slightly stronger team.
Well, but would Jurgen really care about that?
I think that every manager's got a responsibility.
No, I don't think so.
Do you not think?
No, I think it was more to do with fearing the repercussions of chucking in too many young players, and, you know, then what would be essentially, you hope, would be a great experience would actually have, you know, almost damaging repercussions if it ends up going badly wrong. Because I think, you know, personally, I probably would still have taken that gamble. And, you know, I was looking at, and obviously he is, the other thing that I think it's important to say is you can't just play anyone. It has to be, you know, you have to be registered in that initial squad. So that did obviously reduce his options, mm-hmm. because Liverpool expected Nat Phillips to go and join Swansea before the deadline. So because of the way things have turned out, you know, they've paid for that, because obviously you'd have played Nat Phillips and you wouldn't have had Fabinho anywhere near that game. And I think Klopp would say, well, look, you know, almost what happened early in the second half when Fabinho went off and you suddenly had Billy Kometio playing alongside Reece Williams, and just suddenly everything looked shaky. I suppose he would say, well, that was probably why I didn't want to chuck in too many young players. But I think the only one I would say that really surprised me was I thought Jake Kane is a young player who, you know, has been knocking on the door and has been doing really well at under 23s level. And playing him, you know, he was an unused sub, he is registered for Europe, he could have played him, and then that would have given Klopp the option of playing Minamino further forward and giving either Salah or Jota the night off. And I can't really understand why he didn't do that. But yeah, I think it was more to do with not wanting to throw in too many young players than the money side of it.
He has done that before, though, hasn't he? You know, he hasn't been afraid to chuck them all in on a couple of occasions. So, you know, I don't see why it would matter so much in a game that there's absolutely nothing riding on it.
Yeah, but then, he said on the eve of the game, didn't he, that when he was asked about the changes, he said, this is still the Champions League and we're still Liverpool. It's, you know, I think we know how he regards the domestic cups. I think he just sees it, you know, slightly differently, in terms of, you know, it's one thing sending out a completely shadow team in a domestic cup tie in January, and another one when you're in the group stages still of Europe's elite club competition. But, you know, he gambled, didn't he? That's the reality, because I think he wanted to try and do a bit of a balance of youth and experience. He wanted to try and maintain momentum without risking too many, and, you know, it's backfired badly with the loss of Jota.
Yeah, I mean, the upshot from all this is he was in a great position, wasn't he? He had his front three that he could rest one of them, bring Jota in. Obviously, Jota was even a regular starter, wasn't he? But now he's literally got Mane, Salah and Firmino, and Divock Origi, who's not really doing the business. He can't really afford to rest these key players as much, Si.
No, well, it's come at a really bad time. It's not going to get any easier, their sort of schedule over the next couple of months. It's almost felt like the start of the season is being, you've had sort of two or three Christmas periods, one after the other, with the number of games that Liverpool are playing. I know Gary Neville said something about the schedule's exactly the same as it was, but if you actually look at it, it isn't. It's more intense than it is, and the season's condensed into a shorter period of time. So I don't know which sort of stats or logic that he's going by there, to be honest. I mean, the only good thing is, I would say, from an attacking point of view, is that over the last sort of three or four seasons, or so, sorry, two or three seasons, that the front three they tend not to miss too many games. I mean, I know last season Mane got an injury, I think, in mid-January, did he, in the Wolves game. The other two are pretty combative when it comes to the way they play and equally the endurance levels. But that's the only positive out of it, I would say, that you can, I might live to regret it, but you know, you can rely on those three, that they're not the sort of players you usually come down with sort of muscle injuries, but it's only, you know, who knows, they could get a bad injury in a game. So they are down to the bare bones at the moment. I mean, you looked at the bench against Fulham and there wasn't much there, was there? I know James has written the article about Thiago and I agreed. I think they exactly the sort of game in the second half where they could have done with him on the pitch. But yeah, it's going to be a tough couple of months, I think, and it's going to be a proper test of Klopp's management. And I think he might have to think about the way the team is set up in terms of he wants them to go and do the pressing. I don't know whether they're going to be able to do that in every single game if he's expecting it. So it might lead to a slightly different style of football. I'm only speculating there, of course, but I just think if you keep on going asking the players to do the same thing and expecting them to do it game after game after game with the same group of players, it's going to have an impact at some point.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This is The Red Agenda, your Liverpool Football Club podcast from The Athletic. James Pearce, Simon Hughes and myself, Steve Hothersall. So, slow starts away from home. They're fairly regular now, aren't they, James? I don't know, Liverpool had the chance to make a statement at the weekend. City, United, Chelsea, Tottenham all drop points. Liverpool could have gone top on their own.
Yeah. And anyway, obviously it has to go down as a squandered opportunity. But when you have such an error-strewn, largely insipid performance like that, and you're second best for the best part of 45 minutes, I think you almost have to go, well, do you know what, you take a point and you move on. And I know Klopp was fuming about the failure of VAR to punish the shove on Mo Salah in the build up to Fulham's opener. I'm not sure about that one, to be honest. I mean, I think Liverpool have been on the wrong end of some horrendous decisions from VAR this season, but I wouldn't put that one in the same category. I thought Salah had to be stronger. I thought, yeah, the Fulham player put his hands on his back, but it wasn't a proper shove. I think Salah made too much of it for me when I think he needed to be stronger and he could have won that ball.
Did Liverpool get away with one with the Fulham penalty shout? I mean, the slow-mo certainly showed that the Fulham player lost his standing leg with that Fabinho tackle.
No, I don't think so. I think he got that. I actually couldn't understand why Lee Mason needed 400 replays and we had to wait around 3 minutes to see that Fabinho had played the ball. Again, it goes back to what we said last week, that seems to have just been completely lost amidst this shambles that is VAR, is the clear and obvious error thing. And if the referee hasn't given a penalty and the VAR fella needs to watch 20, whatever it was, replays, it's clearly not a clear and obvious error, is it? So why on earth is then calling Andre Mariner across to the side? I do not know. So no, I don't think Liverpool got away with one there, and I wouldn't necessarily have a problem with the build up to Fulham's goal. But yeah, I mean, VAR in general, it still just baffles me. I mean, surely you just need to have a quick look to establish whether a clear error has been made, and I just couldn't understand why we had such a long delay again.
I think it's really confusing. Even the Liverpool penalty, Si, I'd have to say, if I'm a Fulham player, I'm a little bit annoyed by it. He jumps, he turns, yeah, all right, hit his arm. What's clear and obvious about it? Are you frustrated if you're a Fulham player in that position?
It depends. Do you want to go by the rules or, you know, my interpretation of what I want to see, how I want to see the game officiated?
Yes.
Now, I personally would be very frustrated if that was given as a penalty, but equally, according to the rules, it is a penalty. So I don't have much sympathy with him. I mean, he's jumped with his arms up, similar to the, you know, not similar, but the similar conversation maybe around what happened in the Champions League final. So, although it's obviously not quite as obvious as that one. But I mean, I actually thought that the Salah one, I think there was legitimate calls for that to be a foul, because if the player places both hands on the player's back and he does, if you actually look at his arms are moving into Salah's back, which sets him off. He only has to nudge him by one step to put him off and stop him from competing for the ball. Now, obviously, the problem is that Salah exaggerates what happens, but he does stop him from competing for the ball, which then leads to Fulham goal. So I thought there was legitimate cause for that. With the Liverpool penalty, he takes the sting out of the shot with, and his arms are up. So by the letter of the law, it is a penalty. But what I want to see in the rules isn't what's in the rules at the moment, unfortunately. So, you know, that could apply to a lot of things as well. You know, with VAR, I mean, we've already spoken about VAR again. I mean, what a total waste of time I thought that was. I mean, if you slow everything down, I'm sort of repeating what Jamie Carragher said, but you will find incursions on or the disruptions in the game. The game's played at match speed, and I always think that the judgments should be made more at match speed rather than slowing the game down so much. I just think that you will find even like the slightest touch might make it look like a foul, when the reality is I don't think it was a foul. I think it was ridiculous that they were going through the motions with that.
Oh, some great debate there. Right, Liverpool, I think they would have been generally happy to have taken a point out of that, given how they played, especially in the first half hour. What was the stat? They didn't touch the ball in the opposition box in the first 30 minutes, which is incredible, isn't it? This is The Red Agenda on The Athletic. I'm Steve Hothersall. We've got Simon Hughes, James Pearce, and, of course, Liverpool's point picked up at Craven Cottage means that they're level at the top of the Premier League with Tottenham, and they play each other midweek. This one's got a new feel about it now, James. These two occupying the top positions in the league table. And Spurs, according to Jose Mourinho, have got the best keeper in the league.
I mean, that Jose Mourinho is prone to telling the tall story, and that is definitely right up there, because I'm not having that Hugo Lloris is the best goalie in the Premier League. Yeah, I'm not even sure he's even in the top three, to be honest. But yeah, it is a mouthwatering game, and you have got to give Mourinho credit, because I think obviously things went very sour for him, didn't they, at United, and you know, didn't have a great start with Tottenham. I think a lot of Tottenham fans, when he got that job, weren't particularly enamoured at the prospect of him being in charge, and they were worried about how dour the football would be, and there was all this talk about, you know, Mourinho being yesterday's man, and how, you know, there was this new age of successful managers in Klopp and Guardiola, who were more dynamic, more attacking, and that almost Mourinho had been, you know, left behind and a bit of a dinosaur. So, you know, I think he's made a few people eat their words with their performances and their results so far this season. And they have to be taken seriously, I think. You know, I think they are serious contenders for the Premier League title. I think it still feels to me like, you know, almost a four horse race, really, with Tottenham, with Chelsea. I still think Chelsea, you know, although they lost at the weekend, I don't think you can write them off, and City, you know, are capable of producing a consistent run. So yeah, I think the big thing for Tottenham is they are so reliant on Son and Kane. I think, you know, where, you know, we're talking about Liverpool have just lost Jota for 6 to 8 weeks, yet, you know, they've still got an absolutely elite, world-class front three. I don't think, you know, if Tottenham were to lose one of those two, then I think that would really hurt them. But yeah, they'll come to Anfield, you know, obviously on a high, and it's a big game for Liverpool, because I think, if you know, it's obviously been immaculate at home so far this season. I don't think we haven't dropped a point at home compared to the struggles on their travels for Klopp's team. So you know, and if they can rise to the occasion on Wednesday night, then, you know, that point at Fulham doesn't look too bad a result. So yeah, the big thing for Klopp is clearly, you know, it's a huge few days for rest and recovery, and to get the game plan absolutely right, because you know, we know that Mourinho won't take too many risks.
You've got to say, the really interesting thing about Tottenham, everyone talks about Son and Kane, but Mourinho's probably more pleased with the fact that they've conceded the fewest goals in the Premier League side. Just 10 goals against. Eric Dier, a one-time midfielder, is now firmly ensconced with Alderweireld at centre-half. Højbjerg looks pretty amazing, doesn't he, doing some shielding work and the other stuff that he contributes to the team. Defensively, they're pretty rock solid.
Over the last sort of 10 years, particularly under Pochettino, when Spurs have come to Anfield, they obviously haven't won, but they've always given it a good go and played some great football. I mean, I've quite enjoyed those games. You know, they played great attacking football, and obviously, I suppose it's symptomatic of the results they've had elsewhere, that they haven't probably gone and won when it really, really does matter. And I think that's obviously why they've gone and hired Mourinho. Now, it just doesn't sit quite right with me that group of attacking players is sort of, even yesterday against Crystal Palace, couldn't really go and assert the dominance in the second half. I know it's not an easy place to go to, Selhurst Park, particularly when fans are there. It's easier said than done, but it just sort of felt like they scored one goal and that's what they're going to do. They're going to sit back and soak up the pressure. And I don't think it suited them yesterday at all. I think the game at Anfield, I think that in these circumstances does suit Tottenham and Mourinho, because he loves, you know, coming to Liverpool, and I've used that term before, but he's trying to stink the place out, doesn't he? So I think, particularly with the way Liverpool are playing, he'll regard a point at Anfield, I think, against Liverpool as good in the circumstances. But yeah, I don't know, it just doesn't seem quite right for me. I think they might do something in the league this year. They've got a great chance, but I just think that they've got players who can do a bit more than that. Whether they get over the line, and then that gives them the confidence to go and win more things, and that'll justify it potentially. But I just think, I don't know, it feels a bit awkward watching them sometimes. I don't take much pleasure from watching Tottenham. Maybe that doesn't matter what I think, does it? It's what their own fans think, and if they're happy and they're getting results, then great. But yeah, the style of football is just not for me, really.
Feeling a bit awkward watching Tottenham, James, at the moment. Son and Kane, they're a revelation, aren't they? With Liverpool's injury situation, how do you see this unfolding on Wednesday night?
You know, I think when you look back at Klopp's reign, I think it's very rare for Liverpool to play poorly two games in succession. You know, I think a mark of Klopp is being able to trigger a reaction when things haven't gone well. So, you know, that would be intriguing to see what kind of response there is. You know, clearly the plan to halt Kane and Son in terms of the supply lines, that's going to be critical to the outcome. I think, you know, I mean, some of the numbers are ridiculous, aren't they? I think, you know, they now combined for 12 goals, I think, in the Premier League so far this season, the two of them. You know, and I think I saw a stat that I think it was only Shearer and Sutton,
yeah,
who did 13, have ever managed more over a single season. And when you think we're only a dozen games in, you know, I know Son's assist yesterday wasn't really an assist, was it? In terms of, I think it bobbled off his foot into Kane's path, and then the keeper made an absolute hash of it. But there is an unbelievable understanding to the two of them. And I just think Klopp will, you know, I'm sure a lot of the tactical work and the analysis over the next couple of days will involve, you know, protection and trying to make sure that Liverpool aren't left exposed on the counter-attack, because, you know that is the way that Mourinho is going to set Tottenham up. You know, he'll look to frustrate them and thwart them and make sure there's not space in behind for Liverpool's front three to exploit. And then, you know, when Tottenham do win it back, hit Liverpool at pace and try and get in behind that high line. So, yeah, it's going to be a really, really interesting game. And, you know, of course, there's going to be a lot of emotion attached to the occasion as well, with, you know, although there will only be 2,000 fans in there, I'm sure those 2,000 fans will pay a very warm tribute to Gerard Houllier, and I'm sure there'll be, you know, tributes paid to him before the game kicks off. So I'd be amazed if we saw the kind of lackluster performance that we witnessed in the capital on Sunday.
Big game, can't wait for it. I know we love bashing Mourinho, but have you seen the pictures, Si, of his new chair in his office? He's got a Batman chair. Oh, it's brilliant, isn't it? Well, it's the sort of thing you'd love for Christmas.
I've quite been enjoying his Instagram stories. He's something really. He's actually quite funny, isn't he, with some of the content that he puts out. I'd recommend anybody who is on Instagram and doesn't follow him should. He's quite dry, actually. I mean, I've never been, despite sort of not enjoying his football, I've never been as wound up by him as other people. Still finds him reasonably entertaining. And I think he's got the bit back between his teeth again at Tottenham. I think that the sort of the situation that they're in probably suits him a little bit more than managing, as he has, at Manchester United and to some extent Real Madrid. I think he can take control of more things where he's at the moment. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they finish. I think they'll be close at the end of the season, but whether they'll be close enough, I'm not sure.
Right, this is the Red Agenda on The Athletic. Let's check out the Champions League draw, last 16. Just wondering whether there's as much quality in this in, as in recent years. And there's a few teams like Liverpool, like Man City, Bayern, who must be fancying their chances. What do we make of Liverpool's draw, first of all, with RB Leipzig, James?
Yeah, I think Klopp will be relatively content with that. I think it probably could have been a bit easier, but it could have been, you know, significantly harder. I think, you know, I wouldn't have fancied particularly facing Atletico again at this stage. You know, we saw last season, you know, what a difficult opponent they can be. You know, Leipzig, they're I've watched a bit of them in the group stage, and obviously I watched their game against, you know, Manchester United last week, and you know, they do pack a punch going forward, but you know, very, very vulnerable as well defensively. You know, I think they conceded 12 goals across the six games in the group stage, which, you know, usually when you leak that many, you're lucky to qualify. You know, of course, in Julian Nagelsmann, they've got one of European football's most kind of highly rated young coaches. You know, Klopp obviously came up against him when Liverpool had to get past Hoffenheim in the Champions League playoff round a few years ago. So he knows all about, you know, his principles, and, you know, certainly a lot of mutual respect there. I remember, you know, from covering those games, you know, Nagelsmann talking about how, you know, he almost, you know, he looks up to Klopp and, you know, tries to put into practice a lot of the things that he sees that have worked for Klopp in his managerial career so far. So I think there'll be two entertaining games. I think it'll certainly be very different to the games against Atletico, which were dogged and, you know, and they're obviously with their, you know, spoiling tactics and everything else. I think Leipzig do play a more expansive style, which will make for, you know, it'd be a much more entertaining spectacle. Of course, Naby Keita going back to playing against his old club, and, you know, it almost seemed fitting in a way as well, you know, coming so soon after, you know, that devastating news about Gerard Houllier. Of course, you know, he was heavily involved with the, you know, the Red Bull organisation and you know, and helped put Leipzig where they are today. So yeah, it's certainly a game to look forward to, and you just hope, you know, obviously by the time that first leg comes around in February, that Klopp's injury list will be easing and, you know, he'll have some more options available.
Yeah, the first leg's scheduled for the 16th to the 17th of February, 23rd and the 24th. The full draw, Mönchengladbach against Man City, Lazio against Bayern, Atletico against Chelsea, Porto, Juventus, Barcelona, Paris, Sevilla, Dortmund, Atalanta, Real Madrid, and of course Liverpool against Leipzig. Who are Liverpool frightened of, or who do they fear? Do they consider themselves, Si, as main contenders in this?
I think so. I mean, they've got to be in the top two or three, haven't they, really? I mean, I think Juventus have had desperate to win the Champions League, but they've had a reasonably, well, indifferent by their standards start of the season. You know, Jürgen Klopp's record against Spanish clubs in the past has been highlighted, but obviously Liverpool had that amazing victory over Barcelona a couple of years ago, which obviously takes any discussion away from the negatives, I think. But I tend to think that if Liverpool can avoid Italian clubs, I always think they have a few problems with Italian clubs or some of the Spanish clubs. I think it's not a bad draw, you know. So I think Leipzig, I'd always fancy Liverpool against a team that comes and attacks Liverpool, because Liverpool is just so dangerous on the counter-attack. And I remember when Nagelsmann was the manager at Hoffenheim, which sort of started the Liverpool story in the Champions League under Jürgen Klopp. He obviously talented young manager, but was, I don't want to accuse him of naivety too much, but I think they came and had a go at Liverpool knowing that they were probably going to lose. Now he's got a much better team and a much better group of players, but I agree with James. I've seen quite a bit of Leipzig this season, and they are very, very good going forward. I don't think they've got bad defenders. I just think it's the fact that they leave gaps. So, be an interesting game, but I think Liverpool would win that one. And, you know, Liverpool are going to be amongst the favourites again for the Champions League, but a lot depends on whether you've got the players available to play. I'd fancy Liverpool both the league and the Champions League again, but if they've got crippling injury lists, going to be very difficult to win either.
Let's finish off the Red Agenda with a word on Harvey Elliott. I was at Ewood Park at the weekend to watch Harvey score a stunning goal against Norwich. Sat next to me was Neil Redfern, former Liverpool ladies or women's manager. And when he scored it, he went, "That's George Best-esque." It really was fantastic. Cut in from the right, bamboozled Grant Hanley and scored with a shot underneath the keeper. They lost the game, as Si pointed out to me before this podcast. But yet, it was a brilliant moment, James.
Counts for nothing, Steve.
He'll look back at it fondly. He's got 3 goals and 4 assists in 13 championship appearances. Is this a player who's going to see out his full loan with Blackburn? There's no chance of him coming back early, James?
Certainly not at the moment. I think at the moment, Liverpool are really pleased with the development in him and how he's benefiting from the time he's spending at Blackburn Rovers. I think I think how well he's done is obviously testament to him and his attitude and application as well as his talent, because it's a physical environment. It's a tough environment, the Championship. So to go to Blackburn and to hit the ground running like he has done has been very impressive. And I know they've absolutely loved having him there. I think it's also testament, I think, to the groundwork that people like Julian Ward, the lone pathways manager at Liverpool, put in to try and find the right clubs for these young players, because they do a huge amount of homework and in terms of how it's going to work out, trying to get commitments in terms of where do you see him fitting into the team. Does the style of play fit the player? Is it going to be the right environment for him to flourish? And certainly they believe that under Tony Mowbray it was the right fit for Harvey Elliott, and so it's proved so far. So absolutely brilliant for him. And I think the other important thing is when I've seen Harvey Elliott play on the times he has played for Liverpool so far, and I think when you speak to the coaching staff, I know they've been on his case about trying to make sure there is a bit more of an end product to his game, because for someone who is so gifted and gets into so many fantastic positions in the final third, he probably hasn't scored enough goals so far. Of course, that will come. He's still a baby in footballing terms, really, at 17. But just absolutely brilliant to see him performing to that level. And long may it continue.
I think we need to tell him that Si's put a line through that goal. It doesn't count in Si's head. Thank you very much, gents. James Pearce, Simon Hughes, as always. And, of course, our thoughts and prayers are with Gerard Houllier's family and friends, a guy who did so much for Liverpool Football Club. And there'll be plenty on The Athletic looking at Gerard Houllier and his contribution to the world of football throughout the course of the next week. Thank you for listening to The Red Agenda, and we'll return in 7 days.